Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this latest edition of the 2020 Roundtable series. My name is Jonathan Farrington. I'm the CEO and founder of JF Initiatives, which, of course, is the parent company of Top Sales World, Top Sales Magazine, and Top Sales Futurist. I'm also director of research over at the Sandler Research Center. Now, if you haven't seen the preview of today's roundtable, this is what I said. We fully appreciate that survival is at stake for many businesses, but eventually this crisis will abate. And so sales managers stroke leaders must live with the decisions they are making now or accept the medium and long-term consequences. That means more than simply keeping the machinery ticking over. This is not a time for inertia, and it's certainly not a time for commercial paralysis. It is rather a time for revitalization, renewal, and revision. The sales manager leader should think of themselves as a coach preparing a team of elite athletes for a major championship. We just don't have the date confirmed yet. Maintaining them at peak performance levels will ensure that they will be ready to go once the sun comes out again. You know, it takes courage to accept that the normality that we got used to post-COVID-19 will never return. We are going to re-emerge into a brave new sales world, and we must be ready. Now, I'm confident that our expert panel are eminently qualified to debate and discuss this extremely hot topic. So I'm going to get them to introduce themselves in alphabetical order. My first guest is Dave Curlin. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Jonathan. As always, it's a pleasure to be part of your panel.
Go ahead and tell us all about yourself, Dave.
Oh, I don't think anybody cares, but I'm the founder and CEO of Objective Management Group, the leader in Salesforce evaluations and sales candidate assessments. And in my spare time, I also lead Curlin & Associates, which is a global sales consultancy.
And what do you do on your time off, Dave?
I write. It's the blog, Understanding the Salesforce. And I correspond with you. 5 hours ahead of me.
That's absolutely right. And you do write prodigiously, and we're very grateful for it.
So we're glad I just try to rein in the sense of humor, not try to get too funny.
Oh, be like me, just let it go. glad to have you back on the panel, Doug.
Thank you.
My second guest is Bill Morrison. Welcome, Bill.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm good, Bill. I'm good. And you were telling me before we started the recording that the sun is out in Switzerland.
I have to say the sun is out and lockdown is easing quickly. And we can actually see normal life returning a little bit over here. We started this crisis maybe 3-4 weeks before you guys in the UK. And we're coming out that bit faster. And we're having our first face-to-face meetings, socially distanced, with customers. And we can see how the new normal is starting to look already. So, yeah. It's an interesting time over here.
Absolutely. So how does that work in Switzerland? So you stand on one mountain and then somebody stands on another one and you're allowed to have a meeting. Is that right?
Well, it's exactly like that, because that's exactly what it's like over here. We all stand on mountains, eating chocolate, looking at our watches. You've avoided all the stereotypes and understood us perfectly, yes.
And slapping your thighs in lederhosen. Right. Will you share with the listeners and the viewers a little bit about your background, Bill, please?
Okay. Well, in order of priority, first of all, I am a salesperson. After that, I am a sales leader. I'm also the managing director of the corporate arm of Sandler. We split Sandler into two parts. I run the corporate training for, if you like, our global accounts over here in EMEA. My background is I'm pretty hardcore, heavy-duty industrial B2B sales. I come from the world of selling large, heavy objects and service packages, and that's my comfort zone.
Excellent. Good. Well, good to have you back, Bill.
Oh,
so, thank you. My third guest is Colleen Stanley. Colleen's got a lot to tell us about herself, but I know that she'll be brief, and we're very excited that she's just got a brand new book that's going to publish on the 16th of June. And it's Emotional Intelligence for Sales Leaders. Welcome, Colleen.
Jonathan, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Good. Tell us a quick bit about yourself, Colleen.
I run a company called Sales Leadership, and our goal in the world is to create emotionally intelligent sales teams, sales organizations. So our focus is on teaching not only the consultative sales training and leadership skills, but with everything we do, we incorporate emotional intelligence skill training.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, by the way, thank you for the book. I did send you a note. It did arrive this week, and I'm going to try and find time over the weekend to read it, and I'll give you some feedback, but I know it's going to be great.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. And last but certainly not least, Annalee Thompson, all the way from the UK. Welcome, Annalee. This is your first roundtable, and we're delighted to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate being invited to take part in it.
So tell us about yourself, Annalee.
So I am Managing Director of Sandler Training in the UK. And I really specialize in maximizing personal performance. And that's in any role in an organization. But I guess I tend to spend most of my time working with sales teams and leadership teams. And I draw upon both my 14 years working with Sandler and also my time out of Sandler. So when I'm not running my business here, I am an athlete. I'm in Team Great Britain for triathlon. And I think that lots of the skills that we use to maximize our personal performance ready for a race are super relevant in the workplace, I think now more than ever. So I use a lot of those analogies, a lot of that experience when I work with the sales teams and organizations that are my clients.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very interesting. And you know, we're very proud to have you. For all of your achievements, both commercially and in the sporting arena, of course. It's very interesting. The entire panel are passionate about sport. And there is something, and no doubt Dave Curlin's got some evidence somewhere because he's got statistics on virtually everything else. There must be some data that correlates, you know, the competitiveness of sport with frontline professional selling. I must have a chat with him about that. Anyway, again, Annalee, we're delighted to have you with us today. Whoops. Technology, eh? Right. Good grief. Sit. So there they all are. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'll probably go around, certainly to begin with, in alphabetical order. So Dave, if I may come to you first. Clearly, this crisis has created pandemonium within the sales space. A lot of people are coping much better than others, but certainly the sales leader's role has become even more pivotal than ever. One might say even more critical than ever, because they haven't been used to, in the main, managing remotely. How do you think they fared overall? Because I know you talked to an awful lot of sales managers, stroke leaders, and an awful lot of your clients who are also, you know, coaching sales leaders.
It's a great question. And if anything, the role of a sales leader has become more paramount to success. So we have this revenue gap that needs to be filled. And there's a momentum gap. You know, if you go back to February, business was great. Companies were doing great. So they had tremendous momentum going into the second quarter. And then everything comes to a halt. And you can't just flip the switch, snap your fingers, and expect it to start happening again. So a couple of the changes that should have already taken place are that sales managers should have gone from a daily huddle with their sales teams to two huddles a day with their sales teams. But the problem being that most sales managers weren't even doing a weekly huddle with their sales teams, never mind a daily, because salespeople have been feeling isolated. They're feeling alone. They're afraid. They're wondering if their job's going to go away, if they're going to be able to continue to earn commissions. So motivation's playing a bigger part than ever before. And the other thing they need to be able to do is keep their salespeople laser focused on the mission at hand, which up until a couple of weeks ago has been pipeline building. But now they need to be on offense. And the second major thing that sales leaders need to be doing right now is significantly increasing the amount of individual one-on-one coaching that they're providing to their salespeople. And you and I would have both been on the same page if we had been telling sales managers that half their time should be devoted to coaching. But I believe that over the last 2 months, that should have gone up to 75%. And that's, and coaching a remote sales team should be easier than ever. Everybody's using Zoom. How easy it is to just hop on a Zoom call with your salespeople. So instead of flying to a territory and spending 3 days calling on a salesperson's best customers and seeing nothing challenging take place, see some real stuff where they're not on their best behavior and they didn't stack the deck in their favor, and be able to get to people that it's hard to ordinarily get to. They should be spending all of their time doing that. Yeah. Other than that, I don't have much to offer.
Yes, you do. I'm sure you could talk about that topic for hours. One thing I will ask you, Dave, there are an awful lot of people that believe that when the sun comes out again, things are going to revert to as they were pre-COVID-19. So in other words, the same skills are going to be required. Selling will still be the same. Nothing will have changed at all. Now, I'm afraid I'm in the camp that opposes that opposition violently, because I think things are going to change. Because when anybody says that to me, yeah, well, it'll soon be back to normal. Oh, will it? And what will that normal look like? Some things will change. And I said, well, yeah. By the way, have you asked your clients how they're going to be buying in the future? And I really do get a sort of blank expression, even on Zoom. So, I mean, is it fair to say, Dave, in your opinion, that if we're urging sales managers stroke leaders to be coaching more often during this period, should they be thinking ahead in terms of what skills are going to be required? Or do you think too many of them are still coaching the skills that were required post-COVID-19?
Oh, wow. Talk about lots of ammunition for this one. Well, first, I'm strongly against violence, but I'll make an exception in this case, since it's a violent reaction and not actually being violent. I agree with you 100% in your opposition 100% to things returning to normal. It's never going to be like it was before. For one, we're going to see a continuation of remote selling. I mean, even when salespeople are eventually allowed back in their offices, there may not be any offices because companies are finding out that this remote thing works just fine. We don't need all that office space. And we don't know when companies are going to let salespeople back in their building. But more importantly, salespeople are able to cover a much bigger territory and have much greater reach and many more conversations per day for zero cost over video than they could being out in the territory, driving in their car, wasting all kinds of time each day. So we're never going to see outside salespeople in the field to the degree we once did. The second thing is that it's going to be a long time before we have the economy that we had in February, because some industries were obliterated and there's a ripple effect to those obliterated industries that are affecting companies that aren't in those industries, but they were selling to those industries. So for quite a while, there's going to be a tremendous amount of resistance to talking, resistance to meeting, resistance to spending money, and resistance to buying. So the skills that you were asking about, they're skills that we've actually been talking about, but you know, taking a consultative approach and selling value and following a formal sales process and qualifying thoroughly, that those are the critical skills that are going to be required moving forward. But while companies have been able to avoid making the pivot to those critical skills when business was booming and salespeople were taking orders, now with all this resistance and this additional competition and the likelihood of companies being desperate and dropping their prices just to keep their people busy and to keep products moving, those critical skills are going to be unavoidable requirements going forward. That and tremendous objection handling skills and put-off handling skills. The other thing is pipeline was typically built as they went. And nobody had any urgency to do pipeline building because leads were coming in. There were tons of them. I believe that with delayed closings, indefinitely delayed closings and pressure on margins, salespeople are going to need to be in pipeline building mode to make up for the opportunities that aren't closing. And they're going to have to be better than ever at qualifying because they can't afford to waste time on opportunities that aren't going to come to fruition. So the critical skills are the same, but there are no more excuses for putting off making sure the entire sales force has those critical skills and has mastered those critical skills.
So it's all valuable advice, Dave. Thank you. Bill, you sent me an email earlier today, as you know, and you asked whether or not we could include at some point in our research some questions about how skills are going to be changing. And do you want to come in on this? Do you want to extend on what Dave has suggested? Because clearly, you know, the fact that you asked me if we could include that in some of our, you know, future research, you've got some views on this, haven't you?
Well, I do, and I have quite strong views, to be honest. And I think my strongest view is if you are a sales leader, the first thing we have to accept is that there's no point in thinking that we can go from just doing what we did, but doing it better or doing it more often. I think the fundamental difference that we have, that a sales leader has to accept, is that the balance between a doing mentality and a thinking mentality. I think a sales leader has to accept more strategic responsibility now. We're no longer driving a machine. We have to take responsibility for redesigning that machine. Now, that redesign comes for me in two parts. We have to look at how our team's composed in terms of skills. And exactly as Dave's talking about, different skills will be required. And I believe that certainly in the complex sale, we're going to be moving more to a situation where we have to think a little bit more. But in a complex sale, you're going to have more project management skills rather than anything else, and certainly not so many demonstration and demo skills. But I think also, in terms of the approach we take in thinking, I think we have to move away from the idea of build a pipeline, close the deal, and focus ourselves very, very much on what does customer success look like. I think any sales manager who is not obsessed with delivering customer success is going to be left behind.
Yeah. Well, as you know only too well, Bill, you know, customer experience management is right in the middle of my my geography. It's you know, what I eat and breathe and talk about, and it's in my DNA. You're absolutely right. And I think I said earlier on, didn't I, that, you know, if anyone is not asking their clients and customers how they are going to want to do business in the future, then frankly, they're just hypothesizing. Annalie, if I could come on to you, have you, obviously you're involved in developing an awful lot of organizations and working with them and keeping them at optimum performance levels. Have you considered that the way that you deliver your consultancy and your mentoring and your training is going to change in the future? And if you have, and you've reached the conclusion that it is going to change, how do you believe it is?
Oh, well, yes, obviously I've been spending quite a lot of time with myself and my fellow directors figuring out what this can look like in the future. And I think we're all actually of the same mind and are planning towards the fact it will be a blended approach. There will always be some face-to-face consultancy, whether it's, you know, we do it social distance, as Bill's starting to see more meetings are taking place in Switzerland, but there will always be a face-to-face element, but it is going to be greatly reduced. But on the other hand, it means that most companies' sales processes are also going to reduce, because they're going to be able to do a lot of this virtually. They're not going to need to travel to the Nordics to have that meeting to do that demo. They're going to do most of the work, and they're going to have to all focus on being much stronger at qualifying. However, I think the good organizations were already doing all this stuff before. What I'm noticing is it meaning the perhaps the organizations that were just managing to get through without changing, without updating what they've been doing, had just been managing to get by. And for us, if I link it back around to your question about our business model, is we already had a blended approach. It's just there was a belief that if it wasn't face-to-face, it didn't count. And now then companies are starting to see that there is value and it is possible to learn in other ways. As long as it's set up right, there is the accountability tied to the goals in place, there can still be good results coming out the back end.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I, in my spare time, you know, when I occasionally get the odd minute every week, I do actually mentor a number of people. And a question came up this week from someone who's highly successful, and they have specialized in, you know, the face-to-face classroom style consultancy, learning, training, etc. And with a small amount, a small percentage of their time has been spent online. And she felt that logically that percentage would increase. And she really asked me how she could price that, because, and I said, well, you've just got to be totally transparent. It's as simple as that. If the organizations that you're working with, which I know obviously who she's working with, and they're very large corporations, I've got to tell you, if they've got people flying in for that 2-day or 3-day session, staying at hotels, then they've got to pay her costs, subsistence, mm-hmm. flights, hotels. Well, clearly she's built that in to her daily fee, logically. Exactly. So I said, well, mm-hmm. you know, if you go online, they're going to ask for a reduction in your fee. So I said, I think before you have that conversation with anyone, you've got to be totally transparent and offer them, you know, the alternatives. Okay, so I can come to you and you're going to have to fly your people in and you're going to have to pay my costs. Alternatively, we can do it online. We can experiment. We can see if it actually works. And she's actually yeah. done that. And she had the first three conversations late this week. And they've all been highly successful. So, there is that option, isn't there, Anneli?
Well, there is. But I would also say to the person you mentor then that I think being online is it doesn't definitely does not need to be any cheaper reduction. But like you said, it's about being transparent. But it's also about all of us having that conviction in the fact that we can still deliver tremendous value without it being face to face, whether it's about how it's set up virtually, how you add value, and how it's then followed up and used and implemented afterwards. And actually, because we're saving everyone's time does not mean it makes it any cheaper.
No, I can accept that. I just think, I also think the toughest thing is getting our personalities as trainers and coaches and mentors and, you know, whatever. Getting our personality into it online, it takes a lot of practice. You don't have that human contact, obviously, and you wouldn't want it, you know, at the moment, but you lose something, and it's getting people to be prepared to learn another way of delivering information, isn't it?
It is. And that's why I know we can all joke that it's great that we're having this call now and we've just got the slides up, but if this was a training session then we'd all get a lot more from it if our cameras were on, you know, both me as the trainer obviously and everybody as the attendee, because it forces us all to be involved and we can see each other. So you're right though, it's how we develop that skills, how the trainer can put forward their personality in a way that means helps people's barriers go down so that they can all learn. Because that's the, you know, the main point of it, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Colleen, I want to take a different tack with you. You're one of the leading experts, if not the leading expert on EI, emotional intelligence, in the world. We mentioned earlier that your second book is coming out to be released on the 16th of June, specifically aimed at sales leaders / managers. How critical do you believe it has been for those managers and sales leaders to have strong EI during this period that we're going through?
So good question, and thank you for plugging my new book. I appreciate that. So obviously, my answer is going to be fairly biased with the work I've done in this area, but I think it's critical. And let me maybe expand on some of the answers from our other esteemed panelists here. So for example, when you take a look at what Dave was talking about, right, that we're getting more resistance out there from prospects. Some of them are overwhelmed, some of them are scared, some budgets are cut. But when you take a look at the EQ skill that is going to absolutely help a salesperson execute the hard skills, so that would be called resiliency. So then when you back that up to something Bill said, I think we've even got to change our hiring processes. I find that a lot of sales leaders aren't vetting for the soft skills, the EQ skills, that are going to help you be successful today, because resiliency is a soft skill. Managing stress is a EQ skill here. We've heard from everyone about we've got to learn, we've got to master, whether it's new ways of selling or new ways of leading. But when you take a look at achieving mastery, that is hiring or modeling continuous learning. In the words of Maslow, self-actualization. So I'm always fascinated, because we do teach a lot of the hard skills, consultative selling skills, but my question mark is always, why aren't they doing it? Because Dave even said, everybody knows they're supposed to be doing daily huddles. I mean, it's been around since the Ritz-Carlton, Rockefeller habits, right? But if you look at the root cause, it's either belief, as Annalee said, they really didn't believe it was important, or it's instant gratification. I do not want to put in the work required to really develop people, train people. So to me, I'm always looking at what's the EQ skill that's missing in the execution of the hard skill, the sales IQ, as I call it.
Yeah. I do agree with you entirely, of course. And I still firmly believe that now there's never been a more important time for managers to have those skills, to have emotional intelligence. Because I believe, you know, and Dave talked about this, I believe that it's so critical to have those huddles, not just daily, but twice daily, even three times daily, because there's an awful lot of, you know, anxious and frightened and concerned salespeople out there. They're not looking for Churchillian speeches, are they? What they're looking for is, you know, they're looking to be comforted. They're looking to be inspired. They're looking to be motivated. And they're looking for,
They're looking for empathy. And yes. So empathy is, it's a buzzword now, but when you really study it, and it's not anyone's fault really, because nobody truly goes through any true empathy training, right? At least as far as some of the sales leaders I know and work with. But when you take a look at it, if you're going to make that emotional connection in that daily huddle, you have really got to meet that seller where they are. And frankly, what seller wants to admit they don't have your word, the courage? They might be feeling a little fearful. Nobody wants to admit that. And so as the sales leader, we've got to make those conversations safe, because we know when we're selling to prospects, if it's a safe conversation, it becomes a truth-telling conversation. And the same thing happens with our sellers. When we allow for a safe conversation, and fear is behind a lot of lack of execution today. I mean, you might have a sales leader that's leading the huddle and they're not managing their emotions well because they're fearful. I'm not even sure how to navigate in this future. And so that becomes what they call the emotional contagion. So I think empathy is a huge skill. It always has been. And it's one that as your buyers are going through these different cycles, because we don't know what the next new normal is, you've got to be able to meet that buyer where they are, demonstrating real-world empathy rather than what I see an awful lot is kind of what I call generic empathy or vanilla empathy.
Yes, I call it false empathy, and there's an awful lot of that about, that's for sure.
Dave, and people don't do it on purpose, but it's lack of education.
Or intelligence. Dave, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, to follow on what Colleen was saying about why sales managers avoid doing those daily huddles, and she was talking about instant gratification. I think it's a collision of that with what the real problem has been, only it's amplified now, and that is too many sales managers have a responsibility for generating personal sales. and they make more money on their personal sales than they do on the override on their team. So therefore, spending time on the team, whether it be through a daily huddle or coaching, takes them away from doing the activity that pays them best. So that's an essential systemic problem that we need companies to address and fix if we're going to get sales managers doing the things they need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I read a number, and I'm pretty certain it came from you. It was something like 40%, 46% of frontline sales professionals are not comfortable or don't have the necessary psychological confidence to work from home on their own. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me. I think it's 41%. You're way off by a percent, but it's specifically they're not well suited for working at home. Either they're not a self-starter, they don't work well independently, they don't work well unsupervised, or a host of other things. And that means that they're salespeople that need to be in the office, that need to be part of what's going on and under the thumb of a sales manager who isn't there anyhow because he or she is out doing personal sales.
Out of interest, Dave, I mean, an awful lot of us have thought about the possibility that, and you touched on this in your opening comments, that the office is going to be a thing of the past, and more salespeople are going to be working remotely, which obviously gives us a problem. Do you think that's reality?
I do. I think a lot of companies were afraid to have their salespeople working at home, although the salespeople were the first ones doing this going back decades, you know, where they were in a territory away from the company and covering this territory on their own. So that's been a part of the territory salesperson forever. But now companies have discovered that, for the most part, it works. And why are we paying for all this office space and all these expenses when we could just keep this going? Yeah. Since it's so much more efficient.
Yeah, and I've also read an awful lot of people are saying there's going to be a big movement towards inside sales, and you know, external salespeople are going to become extinct. I don't buy that at all. Yes, of course, there is the economic factor. We know that typically, and you'll give us some exact figures, I'm sure, but typically an external salesperson, it does cost more than an internal salesperson simply because, you know, you've got all the expenses and you've got the car and you've got the travel and you've got everything else. And yet, you know, the people that sort of tell us how strong inside sales is and put up a case for it will tell us that inside salespeople are far more productive simply because they don't have to go anywhere. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I completely agree. And certainly the customer is going to dictate this in the end. There are some customers that want so much attention from the salesperson that they actually have them in plant, right? They're on site 100% of the time, almost like they work for the customer. And there are others who've been asked to come by regularly so that they could take inventory. And that's, I question whether that's really a sales position. That's not a whole lot different than the salesperson in the truck that visits the convenience stores that puts the product on the shelves. There's very little selling going on there. It's more of a servicing role. But, you know, most salespeople will be able to do everything they've always done from home, over the phone, over Zoom. And if they have to go out in the field to demonstrate a piece of equipment or to inspect a line in a manufacturing plant, they'll do that. But it would be traveling for specific purposes rather than traveling because I'm supposed to show up with a bag of donuts and a container of coffee every time that I come and visit.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill, before I come to you, I just want to come across to Annalie, who has a thought on this particular topic, inside, outside. And then I want to go back to Colleen, who's got a thought on remote sales management. And then I'll be over to you, Bill. So, Annalie.
Thanks, Jonathan. It was actually just to link back to, you know, salespeople working from home. Do we even need offices again? Because I think it's been, you know, in the press a lot. In the UK, it was widely reported, you know, with the CEO of Barclays saying he didn't think they'd have branches or offices, and Facebook have said some similar type things. And I was leading a group of leaders and managers in the UK on this exact topic a few weeks ago on the future of offices. And most people on the call were saying, no, I think most of our sales team, we're going to keep them working from home. It's just an overhead to have office space for them. But I did have to point out that as the owners, and maybe like those of us on this call, we're all done well. We're all affluent. We probably have a home where we have office space. As the, I don't know if it's a token millennial, but certainly as the only millennial on this call, I take us all back to your 20s, to your first sales job. You probably were house sharing in some grotty apartment with two other colleagues. You didn't have anywhere to work. So actually the office, you went there to be productive, to get out of where you were currently living. And we can't ignore that fact that yes, if it's an older salesperson, someone who's more set up, they have the space, absolutely fill your boots at home, be productive. But the office plays another part for anyone that has entry-level positions, so particularly inside sales or even entry-level field salespeople, is they go there because it isn't home. And we can't forget that at the moment, is the piece I wanted to add.
Do you know, Anna, that is such an excellent point. And what's interesting is that, I don't know if this is an assumption, but certainly, you know, when I look back over my sales career and then I look at people that I've coached and trained, the younger ones are typically start their career on in an inside sales role. That's how it used to work. It was the first step on the ladder, and they used to look enviously out of the window and watch the external sales team jump in their luxury cars and zoom off for, you know, expensive lunches, and they'd be thinking, oh, one day it'll be me. But of course that's all changed now. But I suppose the point I'm making is that when you first start off your sales career, you wouldn't it would be unlikely to go into an external role. And I think those are the sort of people who ought to be working from an office, because they do need managing. I mean, we all needed managing when we were younger. But yeah, it's a great point. Colleen, I'm coming back to you. You say you've got a thought on remote sales management, which has actually been around for years. So I'm far too young to remember it, I'm guessing.
So I think where this is kind of fascinating to me, because we're all calling it virtual selling now, virtual remote sales management. And, you know, when I was a VP of sales, I had over 100 sellers in every state across the country here in the U.S. I never once thought of that as remote sales management. I just thought of it as sales management. So the point I want to make is, yes, there are some differences, and yes, there are not differences. I was doing this 20 years ago, and I didn't even know what I was doing as a VP of sales, right? I was in a startup that went big, so I had an opportunity with a lot of training. I had an Excel spreadsheet, and I think I read a Dale Carnegie book that said, you need to contact people. So I would make sure that I was reaching out to my sellers, and one was a personal conversation, one was a business. So maybe my message here is just relax a little bit. We've been doing this for a long time. And I have to tell you, Annalie, I love what you just said. It's blended selling, because not everybody works well from home or wants to work well from home. So just like the office buildings have been building out those big open office spaces, and now they're having to create rooms because they finally realize nobody can work without focus. So anyway, I think we can all just say we've been here before, even if we don't know we've been here before. That's all I have.
Very good. So you had spreadsheets 20 years ago when you were VP sales. I got to tell you, I can go back 40 years when I was a VP sales, and I used to make my notes on the back of a cigarette packet. I mean, that's luxury, Colleen. Spreadsheets are luxury.
Well, you know, I had actually a good assistant that got it set up for me. But yes, I did have, I didn't even know you called it KPIs back then. I just knew that I had so many salespeople I was managing, because when you're in a startup that goes big, you've just got way too many people you're managing. So that was my way of keeping track of conversations and such. So I guess I was a remote sales manager many years ago.
Yeah, no, I'm teasing you. I'm a spreadsheet maniac. I just wish I wasn't, but I am. Bill, let me come back to you. A direct question, okay? you've been thinking an awful lot about what the future is going to be like. And you will remember that right at the start of this recording, I said something like, but has anybody asked our clients and customers how they're going to want to buy in the future? I mean, how much thought have you given to that, Bill? How much dialogue have you had with your existing clients and customers? And the third part is, what do you think is going to change, honestly?
Okay, so let's start at the end and work backwards as to what's going to change. What Colleen says is so true. To a large extent, we have been here before. It's not a case of anything's going to be fundamentally different, but the mix is significantly going to change. It's going to change in the way that we lead and are led, and it's going to be changed in the way that we sell. And I think one of the things that I notice a lot is that customers have different sets of expectations. I think they're looking a little bit more, and they have to look a little bit more away from just the, do I want to buy this thing to fix this problem, to look at the idea of how close is this to my critical path of things that I've got to do as an organization. And having been through one or two crises in the past, organizations are going to say, well, if we don't have to do this thing, we won't do this thing. And therefore, the salespeople who will be successful are those who are going to align themselves to the critical priorities of their customer. And that means a change in balance away from the fantastic salesperson with a fantastic presentation towards a salesperson who's got an inbuilt, genuine sense of curiosity to say, how will this help you? And that's more qualification, but it's a lot more consultative discovery. Now, I, as far as I'm concerned, what I see is that the change that's going to happen in terms of sales teams is what you've called inside sales, and I would call customer success and customer satisfaction. Those people are going to do more and more of the transactional sale, and I think they should as well. And I think this, the direct sales, the field salespeople, will be professional commercial detectives, and they'll be out there looking for the people who've got a problem that needs to be fixed, not just for customers who can do a deal. So I see quite a big change going on here. And at the very top of that, I think the role of salespeople in the more complex sales will gradually fade away, and we'll end up with enterprise salespeople who will actually have a completely different skill set. Their skill set will be far more aligned to what we would call project management. So yes, that's how I see that. So I see a lot of changes, but it's a progressive change in balance, significantly towards skills, behaviours and roles.
Yeah. I also see that I also see team selling increasing substantially, and I've been writing a lot about that quite recently. But you very expertly dodged my primary question, which was, have you had any dialogue with your existing clients and customers during this period to see whether or not, to ascertain whether or not they feel that they're going to change the way that they buy in the future?
Well, but that, I suppose there's one thing. Do I expect to see salespeople more often? Obviously, they'll expect to see salespeople far less often. But I think customers are going to buy differently to the extent that I think they're going to be looking for a far clearer reason to buy. And I think they're going to expect people to be able to explain how your thing fundamentally helps my organization in its core. Its core skills and its core requirements. So I think there is going to be a change, that it's going to be tougher to buy. Yeah. The justification for buying is going to have to be, you know, very, very clearly made. And I think there's going to be a lot more partnership buying, partnership selling. So I think, yes, customers will buy differently. And I think the idea of a customer saying, well, here's my rough specification, here's an RFP, an RFQ, give me your best bid, narrow it down and close the deal with the second cheapest, I think that time's passing. And I think people will do a lot more choosing vendors before they choose solutions.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I mean, we know that we're going to go through a dramatic financial downturn because all of this aid is going to have to be paid for. And, you know, I think forecasts vary that we'll start picking up in the middle of 2021. Other economists are saying certainly it's going to run through 2021 and we might see an upturn in 2022. I've got a couple of very highly qualified economist friends, what they are seeing and what they believe and they're predicting and they're modeling is a huge upturn from quarter four in 2021 moving forward that will last 5 to 7 years, which doesn't surprise me because, you know, in my experience, 7 years is a typical cycle. So we'll have to see how that goes. Dave, obviously this session, this roundtable is dedicated to helping sales managers and sales leaders get through this and getting them to think, to take action, to stand back, to assess, to revitalize. Are you finding that, you know, the number of assessments that you're currently doing and your clients are doing, is it aimed at recruiting? Because surely there's got to be an awful lot of highly qualified salespeople out there that are no longer gainfully employed. And there must be some real stars out there, aren't there?
I think you nailed it. By my estimates, in the United States, I don't know about globally, but here in the U.S., I'm guessing that of the 35 to 40 million who are unemployed, 8 million of them have to be salespeople. So that's completely changed the recruiting issue as it comes to sales, because just 3 months ago, it was impossible to find sales candidates, and the ones that were out there just completely sucked. Yeah. And now there's 4 million of them out there, and 3.5 million of them suck. So the message to companies and to sales leaders is, if you have cash, if you can get cash, use that cash and upgrade the sales force. You don't need an excuse right now to get rid of your underperformers, your dead wood, the people you've been hanging on to, the people you felt bad for because you didn't think you could get somebody any better. Right now, you can get somebody a lot better. You've got to be diligent about your selection process, and you got to make sure you're using a sales-specific predictive sales candidate assessment. Sorry about the plug, but it's true. But spend the money, upgrade Salesforce, and you'll be in such a better position coming out of this than had you done nothing.
Yeah. I think that's right. So what you're really saying, I think, Dave, you agree with me, there's never been a better time to populate the bench, has there?
Never a better time. At least there hasn't been a time as good as this since 2009.
Yeah.
So the best time in 11 years.
Yeah, and that's a long time. And it's absolutely great. But I do agree with you. Up until the last 3 or 4 months, I mean, finding highly qualified and, you know, professional top 5% achievers, you mean you might as well go searching for rocking horse poo. You'll be just as successful. Annalie, Bill, you wanted to come in on that point.
Yeah, just a quick thing. As Dave was talking, I quickly did a quick head inventory of our top 5 customers. And exactly as Dave just said, of the top 5, 4 I know are significantly restructuring their sales teams. And part of that is to look at the skills they require, because there are so many great people going to come onto the market right now. And I think organizations and sales leaders have to be thinking like this. So often we've spent our time thinking, well, how do I make things go by better or faster or with less effort? But the sales skill opportunity now is tremendous. And anyone who's listening to this call who is a sales leader has to do the tough thing. And I remember I went to a sales kickoff in February before the world stopped turning. And I gave a speech, and I saw the chief revenue officer stand up and give a speech. And he said, this organization is going to go through radical change, through growth. And during growth, 3 things always happen. Some people quit, some people get fired, and some people change their jobs. And I thought, what a shocking sentence. What a shocking thing to hear, but incredibly true. And anyone who's a sales leader has to think, well, who's going to quit? Who should I fire? And whose job do I have to change? And given Dave's comment about the availability of sales talent, which literally didn't exist until 6 weeks ago, this is something sales leaders have to think about.
Yeah. Well, that's why we keep CROs away from sales meetings. I mean, there are various ways to accept the medicine, and direct isn't always the good way. We have to keep an eye on those grey men and keep them away often. I'm going to come back to Colleen in a moment, but Annalee, could I ask you, when you've been sort of analysing and contemplating and pondering over how you're going to take your programmes forward and all your good consultancy work, have you identified any new skills that sales managers stroke leaders are going to need in the future, which up until February, they probably didn't need?
I don't think we've identified anything they didn't need full stop. What we have identified is something that sales managers need to get a lot better at. And it's something really simple. And again, it's probably something that's been around for years and years, just they got through beforehand without it. And it is having a system for how they manage their sales team, because lots of sales managers are used to either being called upon and playing name that tune and helping their sales team as quickly as possible, or passing by in the office environment when something is happening and hearing it and going, oh, let's talk about that. And currently that second bit, they are missing. So they need to systematize how they can pick up on that ad hoc pieces that they would are used to hearing, you know, of whether it was good feedback or, you know, perhaps some performance that could be improved. And that is by having regular one-to-ones, and actually links back to the point Dave made right at the beginning, is by having a system for over-communicating with their team. Yeah. And they need to get a lot better at that, because they can't just do what they were doing up to now on whatever they thought their current system was, because it is not enough. Because they will realize they rely too much on the office environment, the ad hoc piece, and they need to have replaced that by finding it out on purpose.
Yeah. Good point. Okay. Colleen, when you think about sales management, before I come back to you, sorry, everyone on the panel, typically what we like to do when we stop the recording, we like to leave all of the audience, the listeners and the viewers, with just one single piece of advice. So on this particular occasion, what I'd like you to think of is one tip, one solid piece of advice that they can all take away if they're a sales manager stroke sales leader and they're working through this crisis, in order for them to come out of the other side stronger and better equipped. Okay. So you're okay. You've got about sort of 8 minutes. Colleen, how much is your business model going to change? Because, you know, I've known you many years and you seem to be very, very regularly on airplanes going off to coach clients or deliver keynote speeches. Is your role going to change? Do you think it moving forward?
Yes, absolutely. And we've already been making some of those changes. So, Annalee, we are, as you call, folks that can take a room in our house and transform it. And so I've actually transformed a room into a mini training studio. And so we are getting set up with all the new equipment that, whether we are delivering live face-to-face, which I do believe will come back. I've got some clients that miss the face-to-face. And I've got some clients that are saying, hey, we love the virtual instructor-led. So we're actually building out not only the space, but the delivery model to meet both. So it's a blended model, and we're making those adjustments as we speak. And it's different. So it's you can have the same methodology, same concepts, but there is a difference in teaching virtual led programs versus face-to-face, because I think everyone would agree there's cues you pick up in the room that I at least wasn't aware of that might be missing when you're training over video conferencing. So yes, it's going to change. So I'm eating my own dog food, Jonathan, because we're always talking about change, improvise and adapt, and we are doing that.
I think that's absolutely right. How close have you kept, how close have you stayed to your existing clients during this period? Because I know what you're going to say, and I just wanted to use you as an example.
Well, I would hope everybody's answer is the same, is that we have stayed very close. And I will share with you, it's for two reasons. Number one, you know, when the whole COVID hit, it was simply, as I hope everybody with common sense, was not to sell. I mean, it was how are you, right? And what's interesting about that, it's been quite an educational process for me, because I do have companies that are actually doing quite well during this environment. They're either Like we have a company here in Denver that their business is exploding because they took their manufacturing processes and they're making all the plexiglass that's required in the different office settings now. That was not their core, right? So I'm learning a lot from them as far as how they're being innovative and what's changing. So I think to Bill's point, this partnership selling, I've always felt like it's been around for a long time, and it, no longer do we have to be the smartest guy or gal in the room. Your customers, my customers are really smart. Everyone's customers are pretty darn smart. But together, if we can bring our smarts together, get rid of the need to be, again, right or the only one with the solution, that's what I'm seeing is the magic going forward. So staying close is not only a great relationship, it's been a great education for me.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Now, I know that Annalie, for one, has got to go on the hour. So Annalie, before we let you go, do you have a tip, a piece of advice to give to sales leaders, sales managers as they work through this COVID-19 situation?
Absolutely. And in fact, I'd probably link it back to the last point I made about sales managers sort of systemizing their role a little bit more. And that is, and they probably are doing it already, but without thinking, is each sales manager should have a goal number that they aim for each week to call their teams on a one-on-one basis when they're not expecting the call. So if Jonathan was part of my team, I might have called him this morning just to check in and said, Jonathan, how are you doing? Because that's how they're going to capture some of that by the coffee machine material. Not that Jonathan was expecting a call from me at 10, but it's the ad hoc, and we should be doing that as sales managers every single week and setting a goal number for it to trap ourselves into remembering to do that behavior.
I like that. I mean, if you were going to call me at 10 o'clock, I might still be in my gym jams, Annalie.
It's a phone call. No video conference
necessary. Okay. None of that Zoom stuff then. That's perfectly all right.
I'm going old school.
Good for you. Okay, Annalie, it's been a huge pleasure hosting you. I hope you'll come back later in the year and join another round table.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Okay, well, look, we're getting close to the witching hour, so we better get all of you into advice mode. Dave, have you got some pearls of wisdom for us? You normally do have.
Pearls and wisdom, both. I think it's time for sales managers to review their KPIs. And if we're in pipeline building mode, if we have to build pipelines to compensate for delayed and lost opportunities, then those KPIs need to be very much closely aligned with the goals of pipeline building. So it's almost like the kinds of KPIs that we'd have for a new salesperson. And the other thing I would suggest is we should be an all hands on deck. There's like 15 or 20 different selling roles, right? We have BDRs and SDRs and AEs and junior AEs. We have national account managers, key account managers, and logo managers. We have territory managers and regional managers, and they're salespeople. And right now, selling is the number one priority. So my advice would be screw the titles for a while. Everybody's in all out. Pedal to the metal, balls to the wall selling mode, and build the freaking pipeline regardless of what your role is, regardless of what you've typically done. Have everybody building pipeline.
Yep, totally agree with that. And I know you'll agree with what I'm about to say. There are no prizes for having a pregnant pipeline. The prizes are for closed business. And that really is the point. There never has been, to go back to a point you made right at the beginning of this recording, there's never been a better time for qualifying because, you know, it's rigorous qualification. It's not a one-off event. It's an ongoing process. And it takes just as long to work an unprofitable, unwinnable opportunity through a pipeline as it does a winnable and a profitable one. So, you know, there's never been a better time for being rigorous. Agree, Dev?
Totally. And if I can add, so whatever those KPIs are going to be that are related to pipeline building, accountability is one of those areas sales managers tend to fall short on. This is not the time to be afraid to hold salespeople accountable, especially where you're now in the driver's seat. There's replacements available waiting in line.
Yeah, exactly. Bill, can we have your Tip of the day, please.
Sure, I think it's a tip of the day for a sales leader and sales manager specifically. What I would do is take the most advanced planning document in the history of the world, which is a blank sheet of paper. And I would sit with my blank sheet of paper, and on one side I would say, what do I really need to satisfy the customers in terms of sales skills? Regardless of what you've got now, what do I need? And I would put down the bullet points of the kinds of words that I would want my direct, particularly my direct sales people to have. And it's things like people who are partners, who are curious, who are disciplined and rigorous, and who are consultative. Think whatever your words are. But I would say, that's what I need to build a long-term sustainable customer base. Because unlike a lot of sales guys, I'm less deal-focused and I'm really focused on building a client base. Because that's where the money comes from. Almost all, I think, significant profitable growth, it's something like 70% across the board, comes from people who you already know. It's not the hear them, scare them, knock them dead sales guy that does it. It's customer success and client relationships. So I would say, what's the skill set look like that's going to really leverage that source of growth? And then do the tough thing. Look at your sales team. And then look at yourself and to say, do I have the team that can do it? And what changes do I have to make to my team to make all that sort of leverage come through? That's what I would do right now. Blank sheet of paper.
Yeah. Very, very sound advice. And actually, my numbers are very close to yours. I mean, in a typical commercial organization that has been trading for more than 2 years, we believe that around about 80% of business year on year comes from existing clients and only 20% from new clients, which is interesting. And I'm sure Dave's got some even more accurate data than that. Colleen, what can you share with us before we go?
I would say my piece of advice is sales is not a department. So we've heard a lot about restructuring the sales department. I think it's even bigger than that. So at this competitive environment, we're having to pay attention to your question, how are clients going to buy in the future? I do think you have a lot of brilliance within your own organization, but everybody needs to be involved. You know, marketing directors, if they're in charge of lead generation, are they on calls? Are they listening to calls? Because otherwise, how can they even write good copy? Ops, invoicing, accounting. So I would say, yes, look at restructuring your sales department, but sales is not a department.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. People say to me, you know, how big is the sales team? I said, the sales, if you work out or you simply know how many employees you've got, that's how many salespeople you've got. It's as simple as that. Everybody in every organization, certainly the customer facing ones, should understand their role because it, as we all know, it takes small things to deter clients and customers. You know, it can be poor invoicing, it can be poor service, it can be poor reception, it can be so many things. It's the organizations that are succeeding and will become even more successful when the rain stops and the sun comes out again, are those organizations that are totally customer focused. It's as simple as that. So with that, before I come on to my closing comments, Dave Curlin, thank you very much indeed for joining me and being my wingman today. And,
thanks for inviting me, Jonathan.
And we'll talk very soon. Bill, you and I need to talk particularly about getting those questions into the research, and we ought to try and do that very, very soon. And thank you again for coming back at second month running. We really appreciate your input.
I should get a loyalty card here.
No, not until you've been three times.
Okay. I got a free coffee. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're not cheap, you know. We've already said goodbye to Anley. And it's goodbye, Colleen. Thank you again. And, you know, thank you for all your wisdom, as usual, and all your input that you give us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. If you haven't discovered the Sales Futurists, I urge you to get over and check us out. Both Dave and Colleen are part of that 24-strong team. We went with a slow launch, a quiet launch last year, simply because we knew that we've got a lot of other initiatives that deserved our time. At the moment, we're working on Top Sales Library, which is going to be the biggest repository of sales resources anywhere in the world. And of course, as with all JF initiatives, it will be free and it will be stacked with webinars and white papers and videos and webinars and you name it. And we're launching that on June the 9th. So, you know, get yourself over to Sales Futurist and do check us out. And I just really wanted to say a quick word about the We Will Win Through Together. And we have to thank Dave Curlin for adding together, which is so appropriate. It's a section over at Top Sales World, and it's specifically focused on helping frontline sales professionals and frontline sales managers and even their managers to come through this, you know, with greater commitment and with a view of where we're going to be, where we're going to arrive, you know, when we come through all of this all. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, none of us can for certain understand or forecast or predict what it's going to look like when we emerge on the other side of the pandemic. But what we can do is to try to stay as positive as possible. Most importantly, prepare and look forward. And as I said before on a previous roundtable, this is not a time for idle contemplation. It is a time for dynamic, proactive preparation and rejuvenation. And, you know, logic suggests that whatever got us where we are today will not, under any circumstances, be sufficient to keep us there in the future. And I love this very short quote from Charles Darwin. And he said, it's not the strongest of the species that survive. It's not the most intelligent, but it's the ones most responsive to change. And there are messages there for all of us. So, again, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back and be with us again next month. Typically, roundtables record on the last Friday of every month, and we release them the following Tuesday, and we alert everybody via the magazine. Again, thanks very much indeed, everybody. This is Jonathan Farrington. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.